This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Good Monday morning to you. Thanks for joining us. A lot of NFL to unpack. And like the NFL every single week, we always hear the word shocking. It's shocking such a team beat so-and-so. And we know this is a league where we have some of the best players in the world. We know that some of the best defensive and offensive minds are running these teams. It's hard to win on the road. Weather can play a factor. Injuries can play a factor. So in the end, when you come into a Monday morning where you had a Sunday where the 49ers, who were unbeaten, lose on the road to Cleveland, a team that did not have Deshaun Watson at quarterback, and that the Philadelphia Eagles, unbeaten, had never lost to the Jets in the history of the franchise. They lose to the Jets, who didn't have Aaron Rodgers at quarterback, and Sauce Gardner, and DJ Reed, and Elijah Vera Tucker. Is it shocking? Well, yeah, it is. It still is. No matter how many times you get upsets or games that don't go your way or games where you go, wow, I didn't see that coming, there's still an element of shock. And to be honest with you, I wouldn't want it any other way. Part of the magic of sports is the unexpected will pop up. The unexpected will rear its head. And I love being shocked from that, no matter how many times in my life I have seen similar outcomes to this over and over and over again. I have seen plenty of teams that shouldn't be anywhere near their opponent win games in the National Football League. It's too many to list. But I love that feeling of watching the ending of a game and go, wow, they're going to lose. And like I did yesterday in Cleveland. Jim Schwartz put on an exhibition on defense. The way he led that team defensively against the 49ers. Christian McCaffrey scored early, left the game late. Deebo Samuel was out with an injury, and Brock Purdy looked like the weather was affecting him or whatnot. He had a terrible game. But take nothing away from the 49ers. I mean, look, the 49ers are still, when everybody's on that team and they're rolling, they're still a Super Bowl favorite. But on one weekend, on one Saturday, Sunday, I should say, they looked vulnerable. And a lot of it had to do with the way that Jim Schwartz and the Cleveland Browns played them defensively. And the same thing in New York, where the Jets didn't need Zach Wilson to throw for 300 yards. He didn't. But they needed him the most. Don't turn over the ball. He didn't. And the Eagles were more than happy to cough the ball away four times, including Tony Adams getting an interception late that helped the Jets get the Breece Hall touchdown, and that's what they needed. Kick field goals. Keep this game close. The Eagles put up two touchdowns, kick field goals, and keep the game close. And let the defense do something. But the Jets played that game without Sauce Gardner, without DJ Reed, their top two corners. On offense, Elijah Vera Tucker was out on the offensive line, and they managed to win. They're now 3-3. Now, maybe Robert Saleh was right. They believe in Zach Wilson. But make no mistake, the people that were saying if the Jets are going to win games, it is going to be on the defense, they were more right than that. Zach Wilson has been all right. He had a good game against Kansas City and a good game against Denver and a good game, but not a great game. He's not chucking it all over the place for two touchdowns, three touchdowns, 310, 315. But what they needed him to do yesterday was don't turn the ball over. Don't cough it up. Get us going. And he did just that. Because this defense is why the Jets were going to win the Super Bowl. Aaron Rodgers was a great addition in an AFC loaded with quarterbacks. But he wasn't the clear favorite among the quarterbacks to be so big and so important that he was going to lead the Jets to the Super Bowl. Why do people like the Jets at the beginning of the season? Because of what you saw yesterday. Because defensively, they are aggressive. They made Jalen Hurts run all over the place, making bad decisions and capitalizing on those bad decisions. So again, these two games that mean now that there are no unbeaten teams in the NFL, Yeah, they were shocking. They were a little eye-opening. I'll tell you who got the biggest wake-up call of the weekend, and they didn't even play. The Pittsburgh Steelers. The Pittsburgh Steelers are 3-2 with an offense that can't do a thing. They're averaging 16 points per game. The defense is third in the NFL in sacks with 17. The defense is keeping them in the game. But they are waking up this morning, coming off a bye week, a chance to rest and relax to a new look AFC North. Because the Cleveland Browns won with P.J. Walker. Their defense is amazing. And the Cincinnati Bengals have a healthy quarterback. And the Baltimore Ravens are coming off a win to London. And as soon as their receivers learn to catch footballs, they're going to be winning by a lot. So if I was Mike Tomlin, this morning I woke up realizing, yeah, my division is now back to being tough. So we got a lot of games to get to. We will be doing that throughout the show today. We are going to be talking some college football as well because, boy, Friday night into Saturday was I loved it. I loved all of the excitement, all of the analysis, the energy in Washington. Washington, Oregon was one of the most fun football games I have seen in a long time, leading into Notre Dame and USC. But there are other games we're going to get to as well. We're going to focus a lot on, again, week number 6 in the National Football League. Woke up Sunday morning to watch the game, Tennessee Titans and the Baltimore Ravens. The last game in London of the season. The Titans are trying to continue to be relevant in the conversation without being outstanding. Just one of those teams that's like, let's try to get to 3-3, hover around this mark. Let's see what happens. The Ravens are trying to do the exact same thing. The Ravens have come off 2 losses this season going into that game in London where they felt like they should have been 5-0. And Tennessee lost their quarterback, Ryan Tannehill. Malik Willis came in, the kid from Liberty. He doesn't know how to play at the NFL level because he runs around and holds the ball too long. Took sack after sack after sack late. But the Ravens win that game and they go to 4-2. The Titans have many options in terms of their thought process and how that game got away from them. I am sure Mike Vrabel is going to say, well, we didn't do this right, this right, this right, a bunch of reasons. But one of the main reasons was their backup quarterback was not ready to come into the game and throw the football, let the football out of his hands. You know, when you are playing at the college level and you have a situation where you can play a little differently, meaning I can run around a little bit, I am a better athlete than people I'm playing against, I can bide some time. It is a real wake-up call when you realize that's not going to happen. That happened to Malik Willis a few times last year. That's one of the reasons they went to Josh Dobbs late in the season, and he's not learning that lesson. When you have the ball down by the goal line, you cannot take sacks when you have no timeouts. And Malik Willis took plenty of sacks with no timeouts. All right, so the games in London are over. They go to Germany for 2 games later on this season to continue the international series. But the Cincinnati Bengals beat the Seattle Seahawks 17-13. It wasn't a game in which Burrow was lighting up, showing off the injury, but it was just enough. These are 2 really good teams. I think it was a better game in the early afternoon. These are 2 really good teams. And Cincinnati wins as they go to 3-3, evening up their record, sort of erasing a little bit of some problems they had at the beginning of the season with Burrow's injury. And the Seahawks dropped to 3-2. The Browns, as I mentioned earlier, a 19-17 victory over San Francisco. Yes, San Francisco lost Christian McCaffrey. Yes, they lost Deebo Samuel. Brock Purdy didn't play well. It was rainy, kind of gross. They missed a 41-yard field goal at the end of the game that would have won it. And the Browns have now moved to 3-2. The 49ers now at 5-1. Again, no undefeated teams left in the NFL. The Dolphins trailed 14-0 early against Carolina. But how many of you really thought that would stick? Raise your hands if you thought that would stick. I did not. It was 14-0 at the end of the first quarter, and then the Dolphins went, oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, 35 straight points for the Dolphins. They went on to win 42-21. And in fact, the last touchdown that Carolina got in this game was a pick six. So the offense for the Panthers, an Adam Thielen touchdown, and I think they had another passing touchdown for Bryce Young. Irrelevant. The Dolphins go to 5-1. So we'll get to a couple of more games, but another team that played early on Sunday was the Houston Texans, and they are now 3-3. They beat the New Orleans Saints, who are 3-3, and again, no idea how good the Saints are or not. But the Texans with C.J. Stroud are becoming a show. They're in this division. They are in the conversation. They have a better record than Tennessee. The Indianapolis Colts are now 3-3. The Jaguars lead the division at 4-2. There's a 3-3 threshold right now at week 6. That's kind of where you want to be. It's a little more than a quarter of the season done. And that's where the Texans are. And I tell you, when you come to accept that your team is building and rebuilding, and you say, all right, we got a rookie quarterback. We got a guy in his first year at head coach. We've got a lot of holes to fill that they'll start filling throughout the next couple of seasons. It's encouraging to see 3-3. Now, later in the day, you had the Jets winning. You had the Lions just roughing up the Buccaneers in those creamsicle uniforms. But then you had the New England Patriots, who lose to Las Vegas, who the Raiders lost Jimmy Garoppolo in that game. Mac Jones got sacked in the end zone. The Patriots are now 1-5. They've now lost 3 in a row, and it is no longer fun and game times in New England. It is not fun. But the Raiders, they move up to 3-3 as well. If you're 3-3 right now and you are a team that you're like, look, we're not one of the best, but we want to get to a position where we can strike, 3-3 is where you want to be. If you're 3-3, it's in the AFC. It's a good position to be in, even if you've got a lot of flaws and a lot of things. Those things will show up later. But after 6 weeks, if you're 3-3, like the Raiders, like some other teams, you're in pretty good shape. All right, we'll continue our thoughts on week 6 in the National Football League. Again, we'll also get to the college game, as we've saw some real nice shakeup in the rankings, including also what happened on Friday night in Boulder.
Listening to Wake Up Call on the Sportsnap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. Good morning and good Monday morning to you as we continue along. Week 6 in the National Football League, week 7 in college football. We got it all for you. Plus, the ALCS started last night.
With
the Texas Rangers winning and beating 2-0. I had it on the double multi-view screen last night on YouTube TV. So I was watching the Bills-Giants game and the Astros and the Rangers.
I think it was a mistake for MLB. They should have just started it tonight.
Yeah, well, they do have 2 games tonight.
I know. It just seemed weird. I completely forgot there was baseball.
There's really no time to do it. Like, you just got to
really
do it.
Is, when yeah.
You do it. There, I mean, you're trying to cram in the games as much as possible. And if you give way to football because you're like, I have to bow at the mercy of football. Look, baseball knows what it is. It has its audience. That's it. That's all it is. It has its audience. It has its trickle audience of people who come in because they're excited about their city playing in the games. They have diehard baseball fans who love it over football, and that's what they have. But they can't go, well, can we play on Monday? Nope, Monday Night Football. Can we play Thursday? Nope, Thursday Night Football. Can we play on Friday? Well, there's some college games. And can we play Saturday? Oh, no, you can't play Saturday. Can we play Sunday? All right, how about this? Why don't we play one playoff game a week until December? Can we just do that? Yeah, I guess we can. So you just got to play them when you can play them. So I just had it on the dual thing last night. Both games were great. I mean, not really great, but both games were tight. I don't want to say great because I think the Bills-Giants game was crap.
Yes.
I mean, that was crap.
No,
so I don't
want
to say great. But I thought the Rangers-Astros game was great from a pitching standpoint. Jordan Montgomery was fantastic. Fantastic. Evan Carter making the catch, and then they double off Altuve in the 8th inning. I don't have a dog in the fight. So you got to tag second base?
You got to tag second base.
How do you miss that? It's one of the things you got to know. So, yeah.
So it'll be in the business like to call a brain fart.
That's probably it. Yeah, probably. He probably was surprised he caught it.
Yeah.
Probably was like, whoa, okay, he caught it. All right, well, let me run back. Philip on Twitter, the Texans are 3-3. Looks like a 4-2 team. They are fun to watch. This is bonus time.
You want to know what one narrative that went through my head is that before the season began, I had made a comment or joke or whatever that Jacksonville was probably going to have this division wrapped up by mid-November.
Right.
Just because it was more the NFC South. That's what I was thinking of. No, it was the I had Jacksonville.
You're kind of butchering this right now.
No, wait, I know. I had Jacksonville wrapping this up because I didn't think the rest of the AFC South was going to be any good.
Well, I didn't give up on the Titans. I don't think the Titans are crap. Like, I think they're good, but they're not great.
But my point to this was is that I thought, you know, I made a joke that Jacksonville's going to have this wrapped up by November. I didn't even think that, you know, it's probably going to be the Lions.
The Lions are really strong. The Lions are a really good football team.
And that division is just, I don't know. I don't even know what to make of that division.
By the way, Tampa Bay, it works for New England. It doesn't really work for you. I don't like those creamsicle old uniforms. You know what the problem is? Is that I don't think people in Tampa have fond memories of those uniforms.
No, and then, you know, those memories came back rushing in this past Sunday, didn't they?
They had one good season with those uniforms. Doug Williams was their quarterback back in the late 70s. And they got to the NFC Championship game where they lost to the Rams, and the Rams went on to Super Bowl 14. But that's about it. As far as the Tampa Bay Buccaneers history, that's about it when it came to those creamsicle uniforms. Right, the old jokes about they asked John McKay, what do you think of his team's execution? He said, I'm all for it. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that you got with Tampa Bay when you wore the creamsicle uniforms. When they changed that uniform to the pewter and, you know, whatever they got.
Crimson, red, or whatever
that's called.
Yeah.
Whatever kind of red that is. But when they switched it over, changed the logo to the flag instead of the swashbuckling Buccaneer and got out of the creamsicle uniforms, that was in 1997. And from 97 on, they started to make the playoffs more. They were led by Tony Dungy. And, you know, that was the Dilford, John Lynch, Warren Sapp, Mike Allstott years, Warwick Dunn years, Rondé Barber. Then they started to make the playoffs a little bit more, started to go a little deeper into the playoffs. Then they finally went to the Super Bowl, won a Super Bowl. But, yeah, the creamsicle doesn't work. I know the Patriots don't have a great history either with the Minuteman uniform, you know, whatnot, but... Yeah, it's a better look. That creamsicle stuff is gross.
Yeah.
It's gross. And they played gross.
And they did.
They played terrible.
Well,
but the Lions did not.
Yeah. I expected the Lions. You and I both had the Lions winning the division, and we expected good things out of them. And like I've been saying, I mean, they are the team of the show. But I didn't expect the rest of the NFC North to look this bad.
Yeah. Right. That they are – well –
And then on the flip side, I didn't expect my wildest ideas did not expect the Texans to be doing as well as they are.
Well, you're playing with the Texans are playing with house money now. I mean, it's like a rebuilding year. They're 3-3. They're like winning games. You've got a quarterback that throws his first interception. It's week 6. I mean, that's crazy. Like, veteran quarterbacks have already thrown a couple of interceptions. Like, guys who really know the league have already thrown three or four interceptions. He's thrown one, and it came at week 6. I mean, and they still won the game? That's fantastic. It's fantastic. Meanwhile, Bryce Young is struggling on a bad team, and I'm sure people are wondering if they made the right choice. I'm sure Carolina's not. It's only 6 games into a career. But, I mean, the Texans are getting far more out of this than Carolina's getting out of this. I mean, it's great. It's great. I mean, last night's game, and as I was saying earlier, it was not good. The only problem is that I can't get away from a tight game. And like we were talking about this on Thursday. It's like, the Chiefs beat the Broncos, but because the Broncos were in a one-possession game late, I was sticking with it because I know what the narrative would have been if the Broncos had pulled it off. And I kept thinking to myself, what's the narrative going to be in Buffalo if the Giants pull this off with Tyrod Taylor? Like, what if without Daniel Jones, they squeeze by and get this into the end zone in the final down at the one-yard line? And they didn't. The pass to Darren Waller was incomplete. Could have been defensive pass interference. Didn't matter. It's over.
And I liked what you said. I liked what you said. The analysis of that final play when you were talking about
earlier when we were discussing this. You can do pass interference over and over again.
And I thought that was brilliant. I didn't really think about that, but I was like, yeah. Well, I mean, what's maybe they call it, maybe they don't.
Yeah, and if they don't call it, you win the game. If they do call it, they just get another shot from the 1 yard line. They don't get.
Then you do it again.
Close, you keep doing it and doing it. You do it and do it until they finally run the ball and you stop it, or they score, whatever. But yeah, if you're in trouble, do pass interference because they're not going to get a benefit from it other than another play. Right? They don't give them automatic touchdown.
Yeah, they're not going to kick you out.
But I mean, that game was like. I mean, I kept watching that game going, really, Buffalo? Like, when are you going to score 27 points
it was,
in 2 minutes? What's the deal here?
I couldn't figure out. I mean, they were at home, too.
They were at home. They're supposed to have get back from London, like, okay, we blew it in London. We kind of slept, walked through that game. Let's refocus Sunday night at home. Let's bang this one out.
Were they jet lagged? Did they stay in London? Maybe, did they do the opposite thing? Like they went the day before, but then said, you know, guys, hey, we're here. Let's spend a week.
Let's go back late.
We'll practice here in London.
But it does. It goes to show you, though. I think we have a fallacy in our culture where we misread the NFL. We do it all the time. We're victims of it all the time, even when we've been in this process for years and years and years. We can't help ourselves. It's part of the deal. It's like you said, Jacksonville should have it wrapped up by November. Well, yeah, we have a tendency to buy that because we think it's going to go like a computer program. You put in binary code and it spits out results that you expect. This league has never ever been about results that you expect. No, there's always an injury. There's always a guy stepping up. There's always a mistake that leads to something. The ball is shaped that way for a reason. Like you just can't. You know, like, listen, was I shocked that the Jets beat Philadelphia? I was less shocked about that than the Browns beating San Francisco. I figured the Eagles had been struggling enough, like showing us a little weakness here and there, that something was bound to happen to somebody. And the Jets are playing on this, like, confidence level. But when I saw before the game that Sauce Gardner and DJ Reed were out because they didn't pass the concussion protocol, I went, okay, well, the Jets can't win now. The only way they win this game is on defense. And two corners are out? Forget it.
No, but it does make you question the Eagles, though. Just because, you know, they haven't been that, you know, blowing away team.
They've been playing a lot of close games and haven't looked the complete package that they have on their roster. Their roster shows one of the best offenses, one of the best defenses in the NFL.
I'm 100% with you. It seemed more plausible that the Jets would beat the Eagles than the Browns beating. Because the Browns, I mean, P.J. Walker.
It was P.J. Walker.
P.J. Walker.
Who didn't have a great game, but didn't have a bad enough game to allow San Francisco to go, okay, we're hurt. We're injured. We got two guys out, but we'll still manage to figure out a way to get through this.
I mean, and it looked that way for the Niners for early on, too. I mean, they marched down the field, score a touchdown, get another field goal. It's like 10-0 before you can blink an eye. It's like, all right, well, this is just going to be a rout.
Yeah.
And then, no. Browns decided just to keep hanging out.
This is, again, this isn't college where you're limited in recruiting. These are great players. These are top players in the world. And, again, Jim Schwartz dials up a way to use man coverage and get guys on the defensive front to blast into that line. That led to great things for the Browns, so that the offense didn't have to do a shootout with the Niners. Even though the Niners were down two really key players, Christian McCaffrey had only one play in the second half.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sportsnap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
By the way, I saw a short reel yesterday. It was very funny. It was the scene from Remember the Titans. Remember when Denzel Washington is talking to the young kid and he goes, why are you smiling? And he goes, football's fun. He goes, fun, is it? Yes. You sure? I think so. Oh, now you're thinking. Is it fun? No, sir. No, no fun. No fun. Was it fun? No fun. And it shows a picture of the Patriots, and it says football after Tom Brady. Because it ain't fun in New England anymore.
No.
It is not fun at all. 1-5. Holy mackerel.
And I will say that, I mean, they just played bad yesterday.
Oh, they did.
And, when you see something like that happen, you can't help but point a finger at the coach.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Their finger should absolutely be pointing at Bill Belichick for this. I mean, look, I think, who was it? Devontae Parker, I think, dropped a pass. It was beautifully placed.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I forgot. Right in his hands.
Right in his hands. Mac Jones throws a beautiful ball. It's right in his hands. But overall, I mean, come on. The Patriots, yuck.
Yeah, I mean, that's what, I mean, Belichick said. You know, his coaching's got to be better. They got to play better. They got to execute better. And it's like, yeah, you're right on all those.
You know, because
what
Raiders,
are you going to do about it?
The Raiders are a team on the other side. They've got some issues, too. I mean, they've got a lot of problems as well. Like, and this was a team of this was a game between two teams that are just kind of finding who their identity is. You know, Raiders are 3-3, but they're not a great 3-3. And the Patriots are now 1-5, one of the worst teams in the NFL.
Yep.
It's no fun. It's really great when you're winning, isn't it? It's really awesome when you're winning. It's you're going to championship games, or even if you don't go to the Super Bowl, you were still one of the premier teams. It just didn't make it that particular year.
Yeah, just had a bad Sunday.
Probably make it the year after.
Or for the Patriots, I mean, you know, when they got ousted, it was usually one of two quarterbacks.
Yeah,
that are both going into one's already in the Hall of Fame. The other one is on his way into the Hall of Fame.
Well, I'll give Jake Plummer some credit. They did beat the Patriots in a playoff one year.
All right, maybe not him.
Because I was there when it happened. The Steelers, I always love this. I always tell people all the time. The Steelers went to 3 Super Bowls and never had to face Tom Brady and the Patriots once in the playoffs. How do you navigate that AFC landmine in 3 seasons? How do you navigate, like, 3 Super Bowl appearances, 2 Super Bowl titles in the Tom Brady, Bill Belichick era and never having to play them one time? I kind of forget who knocked them out. I know the first year was the Denver Broncos because that meant the Steelers went on to play Indianapolis. Denver played Indianapolis and lost, and then the Steelers played Indianapolis. But, oh, no, the Steelers played Denver, I'm sorry, in the AFC title game. But there, the other ones, I can't remember who knocked off New England. I want to say Baltimore was one year because I remember Baltimore was a team that would kind of bug the Patriots a bit, really play them tight. I remember Lee Evans dropping a pass in the end zone that could have given the Ravens a win. But then the Ravens got him one year. Ray Rice ran all over him. But other than that, it was, you know, either the Broncos and Peyton Manning or who was the other QB? Joe Flacco?
Yeah.
Was that it? Joe Flacco and Peyton Manning. That was about it. So, no, it's not fun anymore for the New England Patriots. So, there wasn't really a game of the day, though, was there? I didn't feel like there was a game that was like, this is the game of the day.
No.
I mean, there were upsets. Those are fun. Love the upsets. Love the conversation about the upsets. But I there just didn't seem like there was one game where we go, wow, that was... If you were looking at week 6, this is the game that stood out in week 6.
No, that's – I remember – I think we brought that up on Friday when we were going over the games. It was like this kind of feels like that college football weekend where everyone's just kind of playing.
That's right.
And there isn't one highlighted games. Like usually that's what, week 2, week 3?
Yeah.
Where we all sit back and go, yeah, well, you know, they got – these are the cupcake games. And, yeah, there wasn't really a game that was like, oh, I can't wait to sit down and watch this. Now, some of those games turned into that.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. I mean, some of the games were close. Some of the games went down to, like, the fourth quarter. But
I mean, yeah. I mean, if you were a Browns fan, you probably didn't think that this was going to be something to really watch.
Yeah, yeah.
Something that you tuned in for and went, halftime, I probably should run to the store.
Yeah, but it goes to show you how crazy this league is. I mean, again, the Niners had 2 injuries, major injuries. They're not a nothing. And Brock Purdy didn't play particularly well. Somebody pointed out that this is the worst offensive performance for Kyle Shanahan since he's got to San Francisco since 2017.
I can see
whatever it was, whatever year it was. It's like 2,000 days that they've had one of the worst offensive performances. But that it can pop up at any time, anywhere. Like even the London game was like for a country that loves kicking the football. You're kicking a soccer ball. That's what all that game was. That entire game in London was Justin Tucker and Nick Folk kicking field goals for a majority of that game. Justin Tucker kicked 6 of them.
I wonder if people in London, I mean, I know they know the game, but, you know, they thought maybe a rugby match broke out.
Right.
That's not rugby, right? That's Australian rules football where they just keep kicking it through the uprights.
Yeah, keep kicking it through the uprights. And yeah, I mean, Lamar Jackson gets as a touchdown. Derrick Henry has a touchdown run. And that's it. Everything else was kicking field goals in a 24-16 game. And it was yuck. But, you know, so again, there wasn't a game of the weekend that was like everybody paused. Again, I think the outcome for the Jets, I think the outcome for the Browns were probably the big docking points of the game, of the weekend. But it wasn't there wasn't a game where we went, oh my goodness, that fourth quarter was nuts. That fourth quarter was crazy. Or that this game really like was 37-34, back and forth. It was nuts. We didn't get one of those.
No.
You know, I think it was just pretty basic.
Maybe tonight.
So, maybe tonight, Cowboys and Chargers. And SoFi Stadium this evening for Monday Night Football.
Should be fun.
Should be fun.
Should be a lot of Cowboy fans.
Yeah, should be a lot of Cowboy fans.
I mean, you know, I know that there are a lot of Cowboy fans in Southern California, and the fact that they practice in Oxnard, I don't think is lost.
There was one moment, though, last night when Damian Harris left on a stretcher that I went, oh, we doing this again? Oh, my God. For poor Buffalo. They're doing this again. It wasn't that long ago with DeMar Hamlin.
So, I mean,
that long ago.
Do you think that had any effect on the Bills, the way they played?
I don't know, because this was an injury where he gave a thumbs up. So you could almost say, okay, maybe this, you know, these are big precautionary measures, but it wasn't like seeing a guy get CPR.
Right.
Like is he
I'm just
dead?
Wondering if it was PTSD for these guys.
Maybe, but I think a lot of them have been through something like that before, because we do see it, not necessarily an ambulance coming on the field, but we've seen players having to get
the stretcher and
you know, get off the field, and then you find out later, okay, it's a stinger or whatever. It's not as serious as you first thought, but he gave a thumbs up. But you don't know what that thumbs up means. You know, you don't know what it means. You know, he could have been like, oh man, it's bad. It's really bad, but I'm going to give a thumbs up anyway. It's not, you know, it doesn't always mean he's okay. He could have been doing it just to make sure everybody was, you know, wasn't thinking of it. So he could go, you know, his team could continue to play. Who knows? But yeah, I kept thinking, they showed DeMar Hamlin on the sideline, and I know NBC is getting criticized for that this morning. I thought that harping on it was a little much, but the broadcasters are in a really tough position. So I said this in January with Buck and Aikman. You're not really trained to do that. Like you're only, you know, you kind of know it could happen, so you kind of get your mindset on how to do it. But when you're young in the business, and let's say they tap you for, you know, you're a young guy, you got some play-by-play chops, and they give you like Georgia Southern versus, you know, the Citadel or something, right, on ESPN3. When you're young, what they do is they'll give you advice. They'll take your tape. They'll break down the tape. They'll say, hey, try to use a bigger thesaurus in describing this and describing that. Watch for this angle as a play-by-play guy. Watch for this. They really kind of groom you so that eventually you could do Florida, South Carolina, and then maybe eventually Texas, Oklahoma, and then maybe eventually, I don't know, NFL. But they don't really sit down with you and go, all right, when a guy's on a stretcher and we're pausing for time, you kind of have to be on your own. And that's why you see a little level of uncomfortableness, because you don't know what to do in that particular situation. I know in January I had talked about being a auto racing broadcaster. It's really difficult when there's an accident and you don't have any information on the driver, and you're just trying to fill time while the ambulance is on the scene, extracting the driver or whatnot. You're lost. You don't know where to go. So Tirico and Collinsworth are trying again to fill time. What do you fill time with when an ambulance is coming off a field in Buffalo? You're going to naturally gravitate towards DeMar Hamlin. You're naturally going to gravitate to him on the field, like in not him on the sideline, holding his head in his hand and whatnot. So that's just naturally what's going to happen. The ambulance had DeMar Hamlin's number on the back windows. So I'm not as upset at people with NBC. Maybe the Notre Dame-USC game with the pairing of Jack Collinsworth, that was not so good. Whatnot. So we'll continue. It's Wake Up Call on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Again, more on the NFL, but I do want to get to college football when we come back.
D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
Again, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That is Ron with two N's. Philip on Twitter. I was watching the ALCS when the injury happened. I saw Hamlin was trending on Twitter, and I flipped over to watch. I was like, oh, no, not again. I know. And he wasn't playing.
No.
Like, I don't know what his status is. Is he hurt? Like, he was inactive again. He's been pretty much inactive all year. I think he played in one game. That was like the home opener, I think. So, but now it was Damian Harris that went down.
Yeah, but can you imagine you're watching baseball, you're enthralled in that because let's face it, Bills Giants, especially the first half was terrible, so you wouldn't want to watch that. And then all of a sudden, you're just kind of thumbing through Twitter and you see DeMar Hamlin.
Yeah.
And then maybe you see a picture of an ambulance.
Well, you go to the game and there's an ambulance.
Right.
Yeah, it's got to be scary because, like, again, none of us are doctors, so none of us know if that what might pop up again, whatever, you know. Like, they claim he got hit at the time his heart was beating, but was that official? Was that, like, the official diagnosis of that? Because I know there was a lot of conversation about that, about the way the impact came at the millisecond of your heart beating, like pausing, but I don't know. I don't know. But yeah, no. But they did show him a lot on TV on the sidelines. So it's Friday night. I did a high school football game. And it was this was one of the longest road trips of the team I cover. And it was like an hour and a half from my house. So I was done with the game. And by the way, the team we had yet another running clock situation because our team's not very good, which is great. But I got into the car, fought through the traffic, got in the car, drove home. Long drive back home. Had to go through downtown Nashville, which is a pain on a Friday night because there's a lot of traffic because everybody wants to go drinking on Broadway. Fought my way through downtown Nashville. Oh, God, I'm exhausted. Get through the highway, go down to my house, get into my house. What do I see on my phone? It's 29-0, Colorado over Stanford at halftime. And I go, wow, look at those Buffaloes. Okay, do I want to settle in and watch it? I kind of want to wind down a little bit after the long drive. But I'm like, nah, I'll watch a little bit of something else, play a little video games or whatever. I'll go to bed. 29-0. I go to bed. I wake up to find out that Stanford came back and won 46-43 in overtime. And then I missed a wonderful second half by the Cardinal. And in overtime where Shedeur Sanders threw an interception, a throw he should not have made, and two things happened in this football game. One, Stanford overcame its largest halftime deficit in the history of the program, and Colorado gave up the largest halftime deficit in the history of the program. And that now falls on Deion Sanders. So Saturday morning, I wake up, I jump on the laptop, wondering what people think about this. Because as you guys know, if you've been listening to the show a while, I've been fascinated by the media's obsession and glossing over some of the deficiencies of the Colorado Buffaloes in praise and hopefully a return admiration from Deion Sanders. It's almost embarrassing for my profession, by the way, to see grown men gloss Coach Prime over and over again in hopes that one day they'll be his friend. Like, give me some glasses. Maybe give me a pile of almonds. Can you get me a good deal on my Aflac rate? Nevertheless, what did people say? Well, of course, there were some people that were like, hey, you know what? Lost in all of this, Colorado is better than they were last year. This is not a well-coached football team. Why weren't they just running the ball? They were up four possessions. And not only four possessions, but like four possessions in which you also needed some extra stuff in those four possessions. So you eventually are going to need a two-point conversion in the four touchdowns that you were going to. That's a lot of possessions. And if you stop them on one, that means they need five possessions of the second half to score four touchdowns. You could run the ball all night. And you can then get out of there, maybe a little closer than you want, but you play. Nope, what were they doing? Throwing on third down. Shedeur Sanders throwing. Now, it did lead to a few touchdowns, but again, Stanford went, now we need five scores, we'll get them. Now we need six scores, we'll get them. But nevertheless, it created a situation where this wasn't a well-coached second half at all. Did anybody point that out in the major media? Not a lot of people. Here's where Deion Sanders is winning, okay? Is he winning on the football field? Yeah, he's 4-3, all right? That loss drops him to 4-3, but their schedule is so tough the rest of the way. They're not projected to win six games for a bowl. They projected to win five, but they've got to beat a current ranked team right now in order to get that sixth victory. That's why Friday night's game was really important. Is he coaching well? Well, I'd love to really ask that to somebody. But I would need that individual that I'm going to ask to be able to get away from all of the shine of Deion Sanders, all of the amazing personality and the everything else that he has brought to Colorado. I have to get somebody who can really analyze the talent on the field and is Deion getting the most out of that talent. How much of their offensive line deficiencies and the defensive line's deficiencies have to do with talent rather than coaching? How much of the decisions based that are coaching that he is allowing to happen from his coordinators, how much of that is a problem? How much is clock management a problem? But I need that individual to come at this without the "and but," because the "and but" is always the problem when it comes to Deion Sanders, right? The defense isn't really good. Well, you know what? They got three more wins than they did last year. Okay, if that's your metric, then there's nothing we can ever say about this team. If your only metric is going to be they have more wins than last year, great. Fine, I get it. If I was a Buffaloes fan, that's all I'd care about. The fact that we're even talking about my team possibly going into a bowl game after a decade plus of crappy football, I'll take it. But if in the end you're going to talk to me about him being an NFL coach soon, then I need to see him coach well. And sometimes I don't see him coach well. Right? But here's where Deion is winning. Because even in a humiliating loss to a bad Stanford team, even in a humiliating loss, it now is on him that the Colorado Buffaloes gave up the most, the biggest halftime lead in school history, and they've been playing football for over 100 years. Now that is on Coach Sanders. That is the one thing he owns. Dan Hawkins doesn't own it. John Embry doesn't own it. Bill McCaffrey doesn't own it. He owns it. Nobody cares. You know why? Because they're a fun football team. Because they bring entertainers to games. They brought $18 million in additional revenue, blah, 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 for this game to the city of Boulder. He's allowed this economic impact. Merch is flying off the shelves. Everybody wants Coach Prime stuff. Everybody wants Colorado stuff. Everybody wants him on TV. And these are the metrics now we're being judged by. Right? And that's great. It's because here's the thing. And here's why I'm okay with it in a way. Because any first-year coach anywhere should be judged on that metric. Is the team better than it was when you needed a new head coach? And so if I'm going to give it to anybody else, I should give it to Deion Sanders. Deion never promised a national championship. Deion never promised a Pac-12 title. He never promised anything. All he wanted to do was bring in the best players he could. He was braggadocious about it. He kicked players off the team that were not good, that were on a 1-11 football team, and they're better than they were a year ago. But here's the thing. There's got to be some legitimate criticism of how that game went down. And no one should fear some sort of, "I read what you wrote in the Akron Beacon about my football team." Right? Like, Deion can't check everything, and people are kind of worried that he will. I mean, this game and this outcome, he talked about it afterwards. This is the one thing I will say about Deion Sanders. Criticism, non-criticism, hater, lover, whatever you want to call it, however you people are about Deion, he does handle the press conferences he has are, I think, from a standpoint of a guy that's been to 1,000 of them, they're good. They're good. But I think at some point it would be a little easier if not everything needs to be so grandiose. I know he was embarrassed at Oregon. I know he was embarrassed at Oregon. That was humiliating. And we remember, I forget what we were talking about last week. Who was it? Sean Payton? Well, you couldn't help it. He couldn't help himself. Like he said, "I made a mistake, I blew it, but they were going to call a timeout anyway." It's like, I can't go 100% my fault. Deion going, "I got to look around the room and find out if these kids love playing here, love the game." No, you don't. You know what happened? You called a lot of pass plays. Stanford was taking advantage of your lousy defense. you've got to just check themselves in the mirror and say, you know what, we didn't need to win 65-3. We really just needed to win no matter what, win. I don't care what the critics say. We're going to run the ball all second half, and they didn't do it. That's more on you than it is the love of the game.